Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Today, I have with me two very good friends, Nicole and Evan.
Hello.
How are we doing today?
I'm doing just dandy. It was a beautiful day.
It was rather nice compared to the past couple days.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry. I'm going to move this just a little bit. That was probably really loud, but I can't see. So that's a little bit better.
Yeah.
Okay. So my first question to you today is, what is the most important part about being a parent?
The most important part about being a parent? Mm-hmm. The fact that you have somebody's entire life in your hands. You know, it's the influence. You got to make sure that you take care of yourself first, because it's really easy to put your children first, but it's like kind of why they have you put your mask on in the airplane first, so you can assist your children if something goes wrong. You know, it's a...
Because of your preparedness?
Mm-hmm.
Like... Sometimes we learn how to be prepared through this process, because I wasn't prepared at all for being a parent.
I mean, are any of us, though?
No. Like, it's such a learning thing.
Yeah.
Like, but what did it feel like? Because you were a mom, so you got to have the physical opportunity to carry a child, which is something as a man, like, I can never have any sort of idea of, you know. When you realized that you were carrying life, like... Is that when that need to be prepared? Do you think that's when?
So it's kind of funny. It didn't actually really hit me until right before I was about to push. So like the whole time I was pregnant, it was almost like, kind of like a fever dream, or just like a oh, this is going to happen, but I'm not quite experiencing yet. You can, you know, talk all you want about what you plan on doing or what you think you're gonna do or how you think you react, but ultimately, you know, when you're holding the little person in your arms, especially as a first-time parent, and I was 16 when I gave birth, so I couldn't even really understand myself or the world around me, much less like this whole other person that just like came into the world, you know. But it didn't actually hit me until right as I was about to, like, I remember like the moment I was looking at the clock and I had been in labor for like 16 hours, you know, like my body just like would not let me progress. It was a really long labor, and I was looking at the clock and the nurse was like, okay, like, we're ready, you ready to push? And I was like, oh, wait a second, like, this is real, this is happening, like, I
just
have a kid. Yeah. And it all hit me at once. And since she was born, it's just been really just like a learning experience, you know, like, you think you're there to teach them things and show them, you know, how to navigate through life, but in all reality, they really teach you, you know. Mm-hmm. They teach you, like, my daughter teaches me more about life and has helped me realize, like, more than I could ever, like, on my own, you know. Like, even she was a baby, she was pointing at the dandelions in the yard and how beautiful they were, and then my mom was complaining, like, oh, we need to get rid of the weeds in the yard, and I was just like, oh, but my, this little girl just sees a beautiful yellow flower, you know. And that right there really changed my perspective.
Yeah, on she's life. Busy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's so awesome.
Yeah,
I like that.
I don't know if that's the answer you were quite looking for.
I never have any expectations for an answer. But I, what that makes me think of is, a lot of the times when I'm lecturing my son, you know, mm-hmm. I've found myself in this precarious position where I am saying all these things with so much feeling and sometimes anger. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, you should do this and this and this. Mm-hmm. And there's always this little voice in the back of my head that goes, are you talking to him? Or are you talking to you?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of the ways that I've found that he's taught me, is in this very sideways, like, almost like veiled way, where it's almost by the thing that I wished I did, which I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do without having him
mm-hmm.
there.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I know that might be very vague.
No, that actually really ties into, like, kind of what I was saying before, you know? Or like, for example, the other night, I had Lee over, and yeah, I took Lee over to see Raina. She was hanging out at my mom's, and like, Raina was getting really frustrated with me. I wanted her to stop playing on the tablet or something, and she just like shuts down. And I got really frustrated because like, I had other things I needed to do. I just wanted her to cooperate and listen mm-hmm. and just like understand what I was trying to say.
But at the same time, she also felt that she had things to do.
Yes,
she
exactly.
She felt the exact same way that you did.
Yeah. And I remember like, Lee kind of saw that I was getting frustrated and Raina was getting frustrated, and we were just kind of feeding off of each other. And Lee was like, hey, like, why don't we go make a blanket fort? That'll make bedtime easier, right? And she just like snapped right up, and I looked at them and I was like, I wish I would have thought of that. And you know, we built her a little blanket fort and she was fine. Everything was good. She read in her little blanket fort, and I was happy, and she was happy, and it's just like, you know, just gotta put yourself in their shoes a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
I had a similar thing happen last weekend. Actually pretty much every weekend, because almost every Saturday morning, I found myself in this Groundhog's Day with my son, where we would get up and I would be reading my book. And while I'm reading my book, it's a great time for him to watch TV because, I'm busy. You know, he can do his activity that he wants to do, which is fair. You know, and then every morning in the transitionary period, when I'm getting off of my book and when I'm getting him off of his TV, we would always end up in this argument. And he would get mad because he'd have to get off of his thing. And it was only in hindsight that I realized that we both had this, like, this crack, this dopamine hit of a sort where we were relaxing and he had his thing and I had my thing. And I didn't recognize in myself that I was particularly sensitive at that point, where I was cranky because I had just put my thing down. You know, so I'm cranky because I'm stopping doing what I need to do. And he's also cranky. And I didn't put any of that attention on myself. And I needed to be prepared in that moment on how I was going to approach him, because I was also particularly, you know, but we were both in that same state of mind. And that's why we kept finding ourselves arguing at that same time of weekend every single week. You know, so I was looking at the cycle and the cyclical nature of, like, how me and my son interact with each other. You know, like, when you... What are some transitions that you can think of that, like, when you ask your daughter to get off of the tablet, she has a hard time, as does my son. You know, are there any other time periods that you feel like there's any tension when it comes to parenting?
Like, different than that?
Like, do you have hard times in the morning? Like, that's another time period that I always kind of have a little bit of difficulty with my son, is getting him up in the mornings, like,
yeah,
before school.
Yeah, I can totally get myself up in the morning.
Like, but it's always a struggle getting out the door whenever we have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And so that's another one of those pinch points that I've been focusing on with myself. Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
One thing that's really difficult, I mean, as you know, like, she doesn't stay with me full time. You know, we have, you know, shared custody with her.
Which is completely normal.
Yes, but it does get really difficult. Like, when it's time to go back home or back, you know, to Pueblo and leave me for the weekend, she gets really upset. And that is a really hard transition, you know, just, like, realizing that, you know, we gotta leave, we gotta sit in the car for the next couple hours. So I try to make it, like, today I put on her favorite songs, or her favorite musical artist, JoJo Siwa. Dance pop, and she was literally smiling the whole way back, grinning to every song, singing along, dancing. You know, we were able to enjoy it together. Even it's hard on both of us, you know, like, I never like to see her go, she doesn't like to go, but it's kind of, you know, just finding things we can vibe together with and kind of distract, take away from, you know, if that makes sense. I'm not great at articulating,
but. No, you're doing fantastic. Don't judge yourself too harshly.
I judge myself a lot.
It's okay. You have to have a little bit of judgment, because that requires reflection.
Yeah.
Some people don't reflect at all.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you were completely confident in who you were and how much room for growth you'd have then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
So how about you, man? What is one of the most valuable things in life? What is one of the most valuable things about life?
I'd have to say participating in it. There's a lot of times where you get yourself completely sidetracked by responsibilities, wants, needs, whatever. But it's just stopping and enjoying the moment that I think that so many people have a hard time with, and I think is so important. You know, even just a moment where nothing's going on, just sitting in quiet.
How do we get out of that moment? Can you tell me situations when we escape the moment? How do we do that?
Escape, you mean, like...
So, presently right here, I'm focused on what you're saying, you know? Like, but I could be focused on what I wanted to say, or whatever, which, you know, like, or something else, or I could want to guide the conversation.
Yeah.
Which hosts kind of have to do a little bit. I kind of have a little bit of an ulterior motive. You know, but when we think ahead, how do we escape from the present moment by considering things that are going to happen or things that have happened? Would you say that would be correct?
Yeah, no, because yeah, you can lose a lot of yourself in trying to stop and focus on the now,
mm-hmm.
and ignoring what's going on. It's just being aware of it.
Yeah. Like Rana's flower earlier, she was completely involved in her flower.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the biggest things about children is they don't have the capacity to think about things that are going to happen. And they don't have much of a capacity to consider what has happened either. They're kind of locked into this necessity for being present-minded, which is admirable because they enjoy life so much more than a lot of adults who get stuck up outside the moment, just like you were just saying.
It's more of... sorry, I'm bad at articulating it. But,
absolutely not. Neither of you should say that again on the entire episode, or I will bring my ruler out.
But it's focusing on the benefits of looking forward, you know? If it, just to put it in the mind of a kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you finish your green bean to get your dessert,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're looking ahead while also taking care of what you need to. And we can apply that to anything. You know, I don't draw enough. So if I think about it in the moment of I need to set some time aside to do that, even though I'm in the moment, eventually I'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just building that kind of a mindset.
Mm-hmm. Of what you find important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there are things you don't want to do that you need to do. And you know, you can psych yourself out just thinking about it constantly, and that's when I think putting yourself back in the moment is better, because then you give yourself time to sort of recollect and reconfigure yourself.
Well, for me, it's the only thing that's real.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only really thing that's real. We do have an amazing capacity as humans to be able to try to future tell. We do it often a lot, you know. The fact that we can use mathematics to get to the moon is a action of intuition, you know, of prediction of space. And that can only be done up here, up in the head, by predicting things, you know. And I think we're always stuck into this habit of trying to predict what's going to happen. And that's what keeps us alive and in survival, you know. Like, we have to do that. But when I'm in a very difficult situation, you know, like I had to go pick up my son earlier this week, and as soon as I left work, I got very anxious and I had a lot of negative feelings, and my mind immediately attached to all of the things that could happen, and I started planning on how I was going to call my boss and call off work the next day if he got suspended. I started planning on what I was going to do for the rest of the day, because obviously I was going to be ruined. You know, I'd already decided that my mind state was going to be ruined for the rest of the day, because I have this mystical power to tell the future, obviously. I could tell where my mind's going to be in 6 hours. You know? So I'm already ruined, right?
Right.
And so, you know, and... This inner voice inside me just kept going, and it's been hyping me up for a while, but it was just like, you know, like, look at the fucking bumper right in front of you. Look at that license plate. You know, the only thing that's real right now is this road. You know, nothing has happened. Nothing is happening except for you driving this car right now. You know, and that's a lot easier to deal with mm-hmm. than all that shit that I decided
right.
had already happened.
Yeah.
You know, like, and when I got there, nothing, none of that happened. I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't have to plan for shit. Like, and so it amazes me how sometimes we can get out of that present moment, you know, mm-hmm. like, and where is that middle ground, like you were saying? Because we have to have some, we have to be wise about it.
It's hard to find a middle ground, because there's just so much to worry about on any given day. But I've noticed that if you do take a moment to, I wouldn't say listen to everything the voice in the back of your head is saying, because sometimes mm-hmm. it just rambles on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can find the one thing like the bumper and put a stop to it, even for the briefest moment, it allows that kind of quiet to settle in, and you just go, what was I worried about?
Mm-hmm.
What was I thinking about this entire time?
Mm-hmm. Do you ever forget too?
Oh God, yeah.
A lot of the times I find myself when I'm driving and I'll have those errant thoughts and I'll get anxious about something and I'll forget about it and I'll have that feeling still and I'll be like, oh shit. It's like I have this like dirt. I'm like, why do I feel like this? And I had no idea what I was even thinking about like 5 minutes before. Like,
one thing I might want to add, if that's okay.
Please do.
One thing I feel like me and Evan, I feel like have like actively been trying to work on is like being actively mindful, like choosing mindfulness, you know. Mm. It really helps, especially
what,
when you're...
What does that word mean to you?
Mindfulness?
Mm-hmm.
Just like what we've been talking about, just being aware in the present moment. It kind of helps you deal with things a little bit more logically instead of being in like your emotional mind. You know, if you're paying attention to what's around you, like when you're looking at the bumper on the car in front of you, you can kind of center yourself, you know, and it helps. It's something that I feel like we both struggle with. It's not being mindful enough. We're too stuck in our heads, too worried about the past. And
I think every human.
Yeah.
I think it's our curse.
Yeah.
Because as soon as we started being able to reason
right.
about anything, you know, the ability to do all this black magic we do with science
mm-hmm.
and all this medicine, it's magic to
right.
me. And it's thought up in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's visualized, maybe not even the brain, it's visualized by that reason. You know, before it's ever manifested into reality,
mm-hmm.
you know, no scientist would ever hypothesize if they didn't have a little bit of a bet to place.
Mm-hmm.
What scientist would do a test if they didn't have a little bit of an inkling for how it was going to go? You know, maybe some scientists do it when they have no idea,
mm-hmm.
but most scientists have some direction because there's that hint of human reason that's is latched onto that predictive element. You know, and that's human.
Yeah, like, well, and I feel like we have a lot of that, you know, but what it really boils down to is action. Like, nothing would get done if, you know, you didn't actively decide to do something.
If everybody was meditating in caves.
Right. Like, it seems cliche, but it really is that simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like rewiring the paths in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an act of choice.
I agree. We choose every single thing. Like, I think that every bit of even the struggle, you know, the choice, not like we choose for shit to come down on us,
mm-hmm.
but we choose how we approach the shit,
mm-hmm.
you know, because life is always going to have some torrent of either grace or difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be something that's going to come up that's either pleasurable or is hard, you know? Like, the biggest thing that I found within that word choice that I found so powerful is how I choose to approach something good or something bad, you know? Like, and if I attach myself too much to something that's too good, even, you know, that could be just as bad as
mm-hmm.
attaching myself to being in the shit. You know, because if I attach myself to something that I find so pleasurable, if something really good happens,
mm-hmm.
then I also allow myself to fall. You know, like, so even approaching a benefit mindfully and neutrally for me, you know, would be important. And to be able to accept it as this is also part of what is, you know,
mm-hmm.
the world is, there's another thing that's coming down to me. And this is how I want to approach it. You know, and how do I want to show my son how to approach it? You know, like, how do I want my child to approach his difficulties and his graces? You know, like, what, like, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. Exactly. It goes back to, like, your original question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the most important parenting, you know? And I kind of said, like, taking care of yourself, like, modeling
mm-hmm.
yourself, you know? Like, children are sponges. You know, the way you react to things is the way that they're going to know how to react to things, you know? So if you can, like, mindfully, in the moment, choose how you're going to respond
mm-hmm.
to whatever situation, I feel like your child will have an easier time with that as well.
I do.
You know?
So I was at therapy yesterday with
mm-hmm.
Odin, and I had a panic attack yesterday morning because I lost my glasses lens, and I was shaking my hair trying to get my hair undry because that's easier to do that than spend a lot of fucking time on a towel. And so... And my glasses fell off my head, and they flew off and smacked against a desk, and my lens fell out. And our room, because me and my son are sharing a room,
mm-hmm.
and it's so messy because we have so much shit in there, that it's very difficult. And I'm like Velma. As soon as I lose my glass lens, I'm useless and I can't help myself find it. And so my dad was there. I'm like, Dad, come here. I need your help. And so my dad gets on his hands and knees and starts searching, goes and gets a flashlight. We're searching for 20 minutes and I completely broke down. I haven't lost a lens like that and haven't been able to find it in so long. It takes several days to get glasses. I can't read. I can't move. I can't drive. I can't work. And I just saw my life flash before my eyes. And I just had this huge panic attack. And I was, like, on the ground crying, you know. And it was one of the lowest points that I've had in a very long time. And the worst part is that my son saw it, you know. And I've started to have a lot of guilt about it. And so when we were at the therapy session with his therapist, once one of the things I brought up, I'm like, I had a panic attack this morning. Odin saw it, you know, it's not a good show of strength. And she said something really inspiring to me. She said, you know, but it could be looked at as a positive thing because he could have also saw you get it together. And seeing you in your low and seeing you recover is showing him and modeling how to take care of himself as well. And I was like blown away by that because I just felt like a complete piece of shit. You know? Like,
well, I've been there before. You've seen me lose my mind more often than they would care to admit, honestly. I didn't really actually consider that either. You know, that she was also there when I got it, my shit together, chilled out.
She's also learned how to help with that.
One thing my daughter says to me changed my mind. She says it to me all the time. She'll see me losing it and she'll go, Mom, patience makes perfect. I want to get that tattooed, honestly.
Did she hear that somewhere?
I don't know. That's nice. I don't know. But it's, I was just like, wait, what did you say? Oh, like it still makes sense, you know?
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Mm. She helps me out.
That's good.
She's got my back.
Yeah. That's a good thing though.
Yeah. You
know? It's good to have the relationship where you have a give and take there, you know, like, let's go in a different direction maybe.
Okay.
Let's see here. What do you think what direction do you think the human race is heading right now?
Oh, I don't like to think about this one.
I don't really like to think about it. When I do really sit and think about it, especially when I'm drinking.
Okay.
I will get just so upset. people. That is a loaded question.
I have a lot of hope with it. You know, I see younger people just kind of observing everything that's been going on in the past.
Well, they have access.
Lifetimes. Well, yeah.
They have access to the internet.
Social media has changed how we approach a lot of it. You know, I go back to the George Floyd protests a lot. It sparked a fire that crossed the entire globe.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have little cameras on our phones at all times.
Mm-hmm. Which is remarkable.
Instant access to this information.
Just 20, 30 years ago, if you were driving across the country, you'd have to stop at a location to try to call somebody or knock on a door.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But a lot of people, like younger people, are seeing this and are joining a cause.
Mm-hmm.
But also, on the other side of things, it's fucked.
Honestly, it's really hard to tell where things are going. Because if you think about like the 1700s and before that, people were, you know, they just made their life for themselves. They had to depend on themselves. They had to gather their own food. They had to, you know, find shelter, you know. And then the Industrial Revolution happened and we started relying a little bit more on machines and a little bit more on money. And, you know, now we have like instead of going to hunter gather for food, we can just go to the grocery store and get whatever we want, which is great. I love it, right? But at the same time, like, things have shifted so much. And then now with the introduction of the internet, like, I mean, I'm only 2 months older than Google, you know, so I came into the world right at a time where everything was really shifting. And it's just really hard to say where we're going to go because, like, you know, we already don't really have to, like, worry about our own survival. I think people are experiencing a lot more mental health problems, you know, just...
I think it comes down to utility. Yeah. I think you pegged on a really important part there. I have slightly different time frames personally. I would put the age at roughly 2500 BC. I would say that the downturn of human civilization happened roughly at the agricultural revolution, mm-hmm. when we started planting and horticulture. With the action of planting crops, you necessarily have to be in one location because plants take a long time. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of herding cultures, but you can take animals with you. Mm-hmm. And so with the dawn of having crops, you have city formation. So, and then you have people having to settle down.
Oh, no.
I might have to go get a charger here in a second. But people had to settle down with the need to store crops because you have excess. You hit on a really important part. When you have hunter and gatherer civilizations, when, or not civilizations, tribal culture, because you don't even have a civilization at that point. But when you have groups of people who are hunter and gathering, if you take down an animal, you know, and say you have a group of maybe two or three families, you know, maybe 15, 20 people, mm-hmm. you know, if we took down an animal together, we don't have any way to store that animal. That animal is not being carried in a bag because it'll be rancid. Mm-hmm. The most important thing that we could do as a group is to force feed each other and make sure we eat as much as physically possible because we are not storing that thing. So for me, it's storage that leads to the advent of currency, because as soon as you have things stored away, you have the ability to hold something over somebody's head, and then you all of a sudden you have this thing called debt. If somebody owes you something, we don't have debt when we rely on each other. We don't have debt when we don't have storage, when we're living day to day, you know. A really important thing that I think is really interesting about tribal culture as well is because there's still some that live on this planet nowadays and that are studied. There are some. The average amount of work that most tribal cultures do for food is like, I think it's like 8 to 10 hours a week for mm-hmm. food, you know, like, and it's usually going and hunting and doing all that. So there's much more leisure in tribal man than there is in farming man, where you wake up and you have to work this settlement, this, all this accumulation and this fabrication and all this stuff that's been accumulated because we're settled down here. You know, but I digress. I apologize.
Don't apologize.
This is your show. What are you doing?
I don't want to take over. So what I think is happening now is an even further distance from this feeling of utility. Utility is usefulness, you know? And so consider work when you are in control of a product. So when I worked and I controlled a station at this college I worked at, say I would have to make fajitas, so I would prep all the items. I'd go down with a cart and I'd grab onions, I'd grab chicken, I'd grab seasonings, and then I'd cut and wash the onions, and I'd batter the chicken, whatever the fuck, grill the chicken. I'd cook everything, I'd serve it, and then I would bring it all back, you know? And so from start to finish, I was part of the entire process, you know? And then I've also worked in kitchens where it's a high volume and you have station, you have a line set up where one person will be dropping just chicken nuggets for their entire shift because there's so much volume at this point that the person's so much disconnected from the work that they're just doing one piece over and over and over again. And this came with things like your Industrial Revolution, when you had factories and people started factory making cars, and you have one person doing a bumper and one person doing a wheel and one person doing a screw. You know, and nowadays we're even more disenfranchised because the dominant form of work in Western civilization like the United States is service economy. Most people are performing service industry tasks, mm-hmm. such as cashier, you know, retail, stocking, even what I'm doing, which is just cooking food over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, most people are involved in service industry, you know, and the amount of effect when we get home, who built our walls, you know, who built our cars, what is my connection to my life past merely making an abstract dollar, you know, like, what's the utility, you know? And the further we get from that, you know, like, please take over.
I just feel like we're so disconnected from our own humanity. honestly. You know, it's like, I'm sure you've heard of Into the Wild.
Tell me.
It's Christopher McCandless. He, I don't know, got sick of his life. He didn't want to do the bullshit. He went to college, graduated, and then was just like, fuck this. I'm going to go to Alaska, and I'm just going to, like, live off the land. And, I mean, he was very unprepared. He didn't survive. Spoiler alert. A lot of people admire him for that, you know, just like being brave enough. He traveled all around the country, did what he wanted to do. He was free. He just wanted to, like, kind of get back to his own humanity and provide for himself and not have to depend on this system that takes advantage of so many people. Mm-hmm. And honestly, yeah, I mean, I admire him for that. At the same time, I feel like he could have been smarter about it. Kind of back to one of your points, he ended up killing a moose. When he was out in Alaska, and he didn't have the skills or the tools or the support necessary to preserve the meat. And so it spoiled, and he starved to death alone. Huh. And he wrote in his journal about how, you know, he at that point, he then realized that true happiness comes with companionship, other people, you know, love. That's humanity right there. When someone goes in and, like, you're a cook, when you cook food for people, that's love, right? That's supporting people, you know? It's like...
I like to put a little bit of love in there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think people just, they don't love enough. They're not connected to their own humanity. They depend on a system that isn't really built to benefit them, you know? And it's just, it's hard. It makes life hard for me. Sometimes it's just got to stay strong. You know, I want a balance like that someday. I want to be able to, like, provide my own food for myself and just have my kids and my family and,
yes,
to my home and not have to worry about all this bullshit, you know?
That's true.
It's like, I just get thinking sometimes, especially with all the dumb shit on social media. You make it at home.
You make your own home, too.
Yeah.
And you have your interests and your passions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Quick active intermission choice before my computer dies. All right.
All right.
I'm really sorry. Not cutting you off. We're going to be back in 30 seconds.
Okay.
All right. We are returned. Thank you for everybody's patience, especially my wonderful guests here.
Of course.
Absolutely.
So let's get back to talking about becoming more human and getting back to our humanity and human-centric thinking. What place do you think storytelling has, especially in our children and how we tell stories to our children and how we get information across, and the special place that things like myths and metaphor have in transferring an idea or a message across to our kids? Like,
I think it's incredibly important. You know, that we were raised on storytelling. I don't just mean us, I mean our ancestors. You know, go back to cave paintings and, you know, these were how important stories were told, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mythologies were used to, oh, hey, don't take your boat over there. A monster will suck it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and talking about ourselves, you know, when I think about my dad a lot when it comes to that. He can talk forever. And a lot of times it'll come with some point to it. Even if it's stupid, like he was talking about how he went on, this was around the time that we're like, seatbelts were kind of optional back in the day. And he went on this talk show. I can't remember what it was. And, the interviewer got him good. she brought up the topic of seatbelts and he was like, oh no, I didn't wear mine. And she was like, you, a lawyer, of all people, like, do you not care about your safety? And since then, I'm pretty good about, since hearing that story, I'm pretty good about my seatbelts myself. It's just important to pass down information in the only way we know how, which is tell a story about it.
Make it interesting.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of humor.
Exactly.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of the movie you showed me recently, The Big Fish.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good one.
It was good. That was the first time I had seen it, and I loved it.
I love it because it's about storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, a little piece of fact was in every single thing that father told his kid. And sure, the kid was like, what's the point? The point was, you learned something.
Mm-hmm.
There's a metaphor to it in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the story about... the town, how he, when he arrived there too early, and then he arrived there too late, and it was a different town both times. The point was, time is not something that you can rely on,
mm-hmm.
ever.
You're hunting for a metaphor.
Yeah.
Which is great. There's subtext. And often I've found that I can approach something that I've found important, you know, like a good story, you know, and even with a little bit of time and a little bit of age, you know, we get to a story, it hits differently, you know, like I've been surprised by how my favorite stories have evolved over time and have grown depth. And it's not like the story changed. The only thing that's changed is the substrate, you know, me,
how you perceive it,
you know, and it's like we add on a little bit of ourselves when we hear a story because we can't help but be part of it, you know, mm-hmm. and step in it a little bit, you know, at least if we like it, getting into it, you know, mm-hmm. like relating to a character and a moral, you know, I think that's good.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
It is.
I hope that our children are interested in that. I think that social media has led to this situation where, like, Odin upstairs right now, he's watching YouTube, he's watching people play video games on YouTube, which it's insane to me that this is a pastime.
Yeah.
You know? And
keep doing it every now and then, honestly.
I think, and it's kind of what I'm doing here, is I'm recording my thoughts and my conversations, and it's kind of like YouTube in a way. And I think that this is a trend towards society. I think we're leading away from content made by companies, and we're going towards people embracing and consuming individuals, others' content, such as the lives of people on the internet. You know, we're watching other people's lives through Facebook and through Instagram and through TikTok, you know? And so I worry sometimes about how this world and this humanity that we've been considering, how it is going to embrace and what the mythology of the next few generations is going to look like. Because stories have to evolve too, and the way that they're told evolves, you know, but there's always a core, a central theme, and that's that moral that always peaks out, you know.
Right.
You see it in more than one story too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Like,
but I feel like it's a mixed bag at the same time though, because, you know, these a lot of times people get absorbed in someone that never meets lives.
Yeah.
And half of that could be, or most of it could be a lie.
Or just a picture.
Exactly.
Maybe they
and
see
then,
themselves.
Mm-hmm.
To or who they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
They're relating to it again because it's the new story.
But if you're...
it's the new myth, is mm-hmm. the Kardashian.
Yeah.
But if you just spend all of your time down the tunnel vision of what's this person up to, what are they doing, you're not spending that time to focus on yourself and what you can be doing. And it's good in some senses, but I think in the long run, it's just a little too damaging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there will probably be a cultural shift about it at some point. I can't predict when.
Mm-hmm.
But
or maybe it'll be a really dramatic, or not dramatic, but really subtle process. And then we'll just find ourselves in a new time in 20, 30 years.
We never expect it.
Guess we'll have to check back in then, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we will. Well, thank you guys so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
I'm glad that I got to come on.
I appreciate your time, and we'll have to have you back again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yes.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate your time and you taking the minute to come down here and see me. So.
Okay, I appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you next week, guys. Bye.